Good evening. Welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast, episode number 68. I'm your host, Aaron Ripmaster, and with me tonight are Eric Anderson.
Hello.
And Nathan Trent.
Hello, humans.
So tonight here, we're going to be talking about My Magic Plus, also FastPass Plus, Magic Bands, all of this new language that's entering our Disney vocabulary that is the fruition of the next-gen project that you've probably heard us talk about previously on the Diz Dads podcast. But before we get into that discussion, I do want to once again thank our podcast sponsor, Fairy Tale Journeys. Fairy Tale Journeys is an authorized Disney travel planner, and they would love to help you put together your next Disney vacation. Just check them out at fairytalejourneys.com and ask for a Diz Dads agent. There are several of us and can't wait to help. Now, guys, on to the topic of the day, My Magic Plus. Disney has poured a lot of money into this, and we've been hearing sort of, you know, drips and drabs of information come out. So tonight, I think I want to try and talk about first the things that we do know for sure so far, or that we're confident we know for sure so far. We'll talk a little bit about some of the speculations, fill in some of the gaps as you know, as we're hearing them and as we feel comfortable with sharing. And then finally, talk just a little bit about what we're hoping comes of this project. So first of all, I think we kind of need to define our terms a little bit. And so when we talk about, you know, this what started out as the codename Next Gen Project, what we're really talking about are several components that all have to do with the way guests will be interacting with the Walt Disney World Resort. And that includes in the planning stages, that includes in your resort, that includes in the parks, that includes restaurants. It's really an all-encompassing effort. And the first element that I think we probably want to talk about, because it's the one I think that people have been most interested to hear, because it represents a pretty major change from what they're used to, is the changes to FastPass, right? The FastPass system right now, you stick your ticket in a magnetic card reader and pull out FastPasses, and you do that when you get to the park, and you can pull a new one, you know, when your next window opens. There's a process that we're all used to, but that's going to change. And Eric, why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, what changes are coming to FastPass?
Sure. I think this is one of the things that's least well-defined at this point, because it hasn't been rolled out yet, but there are promises that it will revolutionize the way you plan your Disney trip and will allow you to pinpoint the times when you're visiting certain must-see or must-do attractions during the day. They have been testing this. Even back into last year, they've been testing this with people, and it's basically in your planning on the website. You can map out like hour blocks of time when you want to visit an attraction during the day. Click into it, and again, this is just in the testing. So, what happens in when they finally roll it out is, you know, could potentially be different, but at least in testing, it was like an hour block of time. People could go in and select their time pretty far out.
Right. I mean, I think that's the big key, is that we're talking about doing this from home. And so maybe that's the place to start, is, you know, the things that are going to be things that you'll encounter before you even get to Walt Disney World. The key really to all of this is the central hub of the My Magic Plus sort of project. And that's the new Walt Disney World website and the My Disney Experience app that's available for smartphones. It's available now for Android and for iPhone. Who knows? Maybe they'll even come up with a BlackBerry app. But the iPhone and Android apps are already available. And just like now when you go and you do your dining reservations 180 days in advance, we now have some information that suggests that you'll be able to do ride reservations in advance. And the information that we have so far is based on the terms and conditions that are listed on the My Disney Experience website. A number of sites have published that information. It's there to find. You just log into the Walt Disney World website now and look for the link to terms and conditions. They're already there. So the things that we know from that include that the number of FastPass pluses you can pull per day is limited and may vary based on park. That just makes sense, right? There's more experiences in the Magic Kingdom than there are in Animal Kingdom. So
sure, absolutely.
That's just logical. One interesting aspect from those terms and conditions is that when you use FastPass Plus, you can only use it in one park per day. So that'll have a major impact for some guests who enjoy park hopping. Like Nate, for example, on the Diz Dads trip, you guys did a lot of bouncing from park to park, right?
Yes, sir. Ended up in the Magic Kingdom almost every night.
Yeah, and so with My Magic Plus, you'd only be able to do those advance attraction reservations in one park per day. You'll also only be able to use it once per ride. So unlike now where you can go and grab as many, if you just wanted to only have fast passes for Space Mountain and you could, grab a fast pass, wait till your next window, grab another fast pass. You couldn't do that anymore. You'd have to choose one per day. So far, the terms and conditions say you'll be able to log in and reserve rides and events up to 60 days in advance. That's what the terms and conditions say currently. We'll see if that changes. I don't know. Does anybody have any concerns about that 60 days in advance? I mean, it seems to me there are a couple of possible problems there.
Yeah, well, 60 days. It depends on how big of the window is as far as when that fast pass is available. Eric mentioned an hour earlier in testing, but I would hope when the real system rolls out that the window might actually be a little larger because it's kind of hard to define that early in advance, a one-hour window.
Right, right. Eric, there was something you wanted to mention?
Well, I'm one of those people who plans where I'm going to eat 6 months out when I'm planning a Disney trip. So, knowing that I'm going to be, in a given park on a given day and knowing the rides that I definitely want to hit, I don't know. It doesn't sound too bad to me to know a couple months in advance. I mean, that does maybe tie you down more to a park. But again, if you've got an in-park dining reservation, that pretty much ties you down. And those end up being pretty necessary if you're trying to get into a popular restaurant. And especially during a time like free dining, those ADRs really get packed up.
Well, that's true. I think my concern is that I'm afraid it's going to be confusing for guests because you now have this proliferation of deadlines. You've got the 180-day deadline for ADRs, but then a 60-day deadline for FastPass Plus, and I wonder whether that confusion is going to cause some problems with people either getting frustrated because they go and do their dining reservations 180 days in advance and My Magic Plus isn't working, right? At least that being their reaction, or worse, realizing that they have to book 60 days for My Magic Plus, and then when they go to do their My Magic Plus reservations, saying, oh, and I should probably go ahead and do my ADRs too, and finding availability limited because, they could have been making those reservations 120 days ago.
That's certainly possible. I also think, though, that at the heart of all this is an emphasis on guest communication, like having people have a device, people have an email address that is used to get them into the system. It's tied to their records, and it's where Disney can also send stuff to them to give them hints. I mean, I think the Disney Cruise Line is really good about alerting you to when you can check in for different things, and I would expect this to run the same way if they're smart about it, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. The fact that they're now using this better with two-way communication. I mean, I think that that's one of the areas that Disney's been working on improving. And we've even noticed it from the travel agent perspective, because even before My Magic Plus rolled out, they were starting a pilot program where they'd ask us, if, after booking a trip for a client, they would ask for the client's email address specifically so that they could alert the client about upcoming deadlines. Not to market to them anything in particular, and they were very specific about that. They said, you know, you're not giving us this email address for marketing purposes. It's purely to provide them with notifications. And then they gave, you know, really nicely formatted email reminders of dining reservations, reminders of final payment deadlines, things like that. So that might be one way that they could alleviate some of that deadline confusion.
You know, one aspect of FastPass Plus I've heard is that, you know, the another element with the My Disney Experience that you'd be able to change your fast passes that you have reserved. Say, maybe I didn't want this one, or I can't make it this one. You can swap it out for another one.
Right, right. I think that's a great example. And, you know, when we were there for the Diz Dads trip, we ate a couple of fast passes because, like, there was one at one point in Animal Kingdom where, you know, we had Everest fast passes, but we were meeting up with the group at Dinosaur, and by the time we got through Dinosaur, we didn't have enough time to get to Everest and ride the ride, and then back to Flame Tree where we were meeting people for lunch. You know, so we essentially ate those fast passes. If we were on the Fast Pass Plus system, as long as you're an hour out, at least that's one of those things that maybe is a little speculative. We don't know that for sure, but that's the number that I've been hearing. You know, you're as long as you're an hour or two out, you can try and swap that around and at least not waste that opportunity. And that's a benefit. That's something that's not available now. I think there's been some confusion because this terms and condition language talks about once a customer's using FastPass Plus, then you won't be able to use standard FastPass. And I think that that has led to what I think is going to be an erroneous conclusion. I think people, a lot of people are assuming that you're not going to be able to get same day fast passes, that the only fast passes are going to be advanced reservation. And I don't think there's any information yet that would confirm that. Is anybody hearing anything along those lines?
Everything I've heard has been to the contrary of that, you know, that they're going to have to keep the current FastPass system available for those people who purchase tickets at the gate.
Well, I think that that's going to change over. And I think the current FastPass system will stay for a while just because they've got to kind of work through the people who already have a lot of paper tickets out. But ultimately, the regular FastPass machines, there's no question those regular machines are going to go away. But I think that we've seen some information, and I want to say that this actually came from Tom Staggs when he made his, you know, there was all that discussion in the press when they first kind of talked publicly about My Magic Plus and announced what everybody kind of knew who was coming. But one of the things he said in one of the follow-up interviews is that they fully expect there to still be day of FastPass Plus available. I don't think that it's accurate to say that the only FastPasses that are going to be available are the ones that you book in advance. There may be some, you know, fewer choices. There may be more limited times that they're available for. You know, it's possible they may run out a little faster, but I think that that guests are still going to have opportunities to, you know, get a new FastPass Plus. Like, say at the last minute, you find you're in a different park. Well, you release the FastPasses, your FastPass Pluses for the park that you were going to be in. My guess is that they're going to let you draw FastPass Pluses that same day in the park you do end up in. Is there any reason to believe that's not true?
I think it's the same thing with, you know, swapping your existing FastPass Plus
right.
reservation ahead of time. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, I'm not sure how different it would be from the regular FastPass, just because it's pulling from the same pool of FastPasses. If you think there's a limited number of FastPasses every day, some of those are going to have to be spoken for, at least for right now, for the FastPass Plus. Others are going to be for the regular FastPasses. And, you know, at some point, you can see how those that sort of that dichotomy and what goes to into which bucket might change. On the other hand, it's going to take a while. I mean, they did put in regular Fastpass machines in the new Fantasyland, and they didn't really have to do that if, you know, they've had these plans on the books for a while, and
right.
They could have done a remote location. So that, I don't know, that suggests to me that those will still be around for a little while.
Well, I mean, the other thing, though, is that those Fastpass Plus kiosks are pretty simple to install. I mean, because there's no paper stock in them or anything, they're pretty small. They don't take up a lot of space, and they're, you know, it's not like you have to keep them stocked. So I don't think that would be a difficult change out. I think one of the other things to talk about is that it's more than just, like, things that we use FastPasses for now are just the beginning of FastPass Plus. There are going to be other ways to use FastPass Plus besides at what tend to be D&E ticket attractions.
Right, yeah. The parade viewing, for one, is a pretty revolutionary idea. It's a little like the Fast Passes for World of Color out in Disneyland in California, that you've got an event that you're getting special seating for or a special viewing spot for
right
ahead of time.
Yeah. One of the things about FastPass Plus being available for things like shows and parades, in addition to attractions, is I think it suddenly makes the FastPass system actually more usable for more people, because, you know, families with young kids, for example, in a lot of ways, like in Magic Kingdom, the only FastPass that somebody with small kid is likely to use is maybe Jungle Cruise. I can't think of another FastPass. Well, maybe Journey the Little Mermaid. But, you know, there's a limited number of attractions that would actually be interesting. On the other hand, boy, you have somebody with young kids who enjoys the parade, and they've got an opportunity to get VIP seating for a parade and ensure that their kids are not going to have to, you know, fight with the big crowd to get a good view of the parade. And that's worth a lot more to them than a Space Mountain Fast Pass or a Big Thunder Mountain Fast Pass, right?
Yes, sir.
So, I mean, I guess what I'm getting at here is I think that there will certainly be an adjustment period, but it seems to me that FastPass Plus is ultimately going to give guests really more control than they had before and a lot more flexibility, even if they're having to make some decisions farther out in advance.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly flexibility with, for the first time ever, you don't have to get to Hollywood Studios at rope drop to be able to ride Toy Story Midway Mania at some point during the day, right? Because if you can book it ahead of time for 3 p.m., you don't have to be there when the park opens.
Right.
And know you're going to ride it. I mean, that frees up so much of your day to do other stuff. It really enables you, it would enable you, I think, to kind of route around those gigantic sort of time-suck attractions. It's not just getting on the attractions the problem. It's having to be there at the beginning of the day to either get on the ride or get in a line to get a fast pass along with 12,000 other people.
Well, and I would think that it should certainly limit the, you know, crazy stampedes like you get at Toy Story Mania or at Soarin' or at, you sometimes see them for Space Mountain on busy days. It really helps kind of even out crowd flow, which has to be part of Disney's goal in rolling out this whole project.
Oh, absolutely. They everything they do is to manage the crowds, right? Like it's an entertainment destination, but really in terms of operations, what they're trying to do is keep people spread out around the parks and within the parks as much as they can so that nowhere gets overwhelmed.
A piece of this, too, is that Disney's goal, it's not like Disney wants you waiting in lines. It's the opposite. The whole reason they introduced FastPass in the first place is that if guests are spending less time in line, then they're spending time in stores and restaurants, you know, spending their money, which is really what this is all about. Let's free up guests to spend their money.
To spend more money?
Right. And part of my Magic Plus is making it easier to spend your money, too. As a matter of fact, one of the elements of my Magic Plus is that there are going to be a number of quick service dining locations that they're going to be experimenting with sort of a version of order ahead dining. And that's all facilitated by the My Disney Experience app on the smartphones. I don't know, Nate, is that something you think you might take advantage of? The ability to, you know, check into a restaurant, you know, half an hour ahead, go ahead and give them your order and, you know, potentially be able to pick that food up from a shorter kind of express line?
Absolutely. I mean, nothing like going in there at lunchtime and seeing a mass of humanity waiting in line to get their food. If I could do that ahead of time and just walk up to the counter and pick it up, be a stellar way to use this.
And, you know, the terms and conditions are telling us that, you know, users will have the option of opting in and getting email and text alerts that are reminders throughout the day. So you've got, you know, you've got a FastPass Plus, you know, reservation for Big Thunder Mountain in the afternoon. You're trying to decide what to do for lunch. You get your text reminder that says, hey, you've got Big Thunder Mountain at 1:30 and it's 11 o'clock. You can hop into your My Disney Experience app, go ahead and place an order over at Pecos Bills, you know, fast track your way to pick up your advance ordered meal and have plenty of time to make your fast pass for Big Thunder.
And I just want to say that, you know, the day that I can order my lunch while I'm actually riding Space Mountain, the day we've arrived in Tomorrowland, finally.
Hey, yeah. We can podcast from Space Mountain.
That's true. Nate did bring us live to Space Mountain. I don't know, Nate, you're the one who's had the most experience on that. Could you have entered a Cosmic Rays lunch order while on the ride?
While on the ride, no. While waiting in line, yes.
Okay. Now, that does get us to, you know, a couple of the potential difficulties of the system, and that is that a lot of this is really relying on your ability to be networked in with Disney system. And I don't know about you guys, but there are some places that I found, you know, there was just no coverage to speak of. I couldn't get connected to the in-park Wi-Fi, and I couldn't get an AT&T signal. Not a lot of places. It was much better than the last time I was at Walt Disney World, but there were still some dead spots. Did you guys find that as well?
I didn't try the wireless connection too much, but my phone connects through Verizon Towers, and you know, I only had issues inside attractions like the Haunted Mansion. My signal went dead. And at the end of Space Mountain, I had good connection throughout the ride, but at the end of Space Mountain, it just died on me. So,
all right. How about you, Eric?
Yeah, there are spots, like Nate was saying, usually within ride. So Soarin' is an infamous dead zone there right before you get on the ride. But outside of rides, I didn't find I had any problem anywhere. There are some spots where I noticed a definite slowness on the in-park Wi-Fi. So I'd, you know, just kick out of it and
right.
Turn off the wireless to get over onto the AT&T signal. But overall, I felt like I wasn't out of the range of connection for very long and not at critical times. So you just have to understand that if you're in a ride building, then you will not be potentially able to use some of these services.
Sure.
Aaron, do you know if this is just a speculation question? I wonder if they'll hold any FastPass Pluses in reserve for day of swapping. Because, you know, I can foresee having a 60-day window and Space Mountain's going to be booked up.
No, I do think that this is all about capacity planning. And I read somebody over on Disboards did some pretty good sleuthing work and did the best job I'd seen so far of, you know, tracking down ride capacities, sort of in-practice ride capacities. I mean, those aren't publicly available information, but there's enough that floats out about it that it could be collected from various sources. And, you know, basically compiled ride capacity information, compared it to park attendance numbers. And realistically, there's enough capacity to handle, you know, three FastPass Plus a day already, just based on the attractions that it's currently available for in Magic Kingdom and, I want to say, Epcot, or maybe Magic Kingdom and Hollywood Studios. And Epcot is close, and Animal Kingdom has a little way to go. So you know, what that tells me is a couple of things, and that there was capacity in excess of that. So what that tells me is that the goal ultimately is probably to have three FastPass Plus attractions per person per day, and to have at least another, you know, maybe third of that available for day of, to make room for swapping around, for day of guests and things like that. That's the impression that I get. But you're right, that's speculation. We don't really know yet. And I'm not sure Disney knows yet either. That's why they're you know, taking this rollout fairly slow and testing it a little bit at a time.
You know, I can see myself planning. I like going to the park when it's actually raining because it's less crowded. But, you know, say Family X plans to go to Animal Kingdom on this day and it's a torrential downpour all day. So they, you know, they need to be able to swap those fast passes on the fly. And, you know, something like Expedition Everest may not be available if they don't have a reserve. But again, that's speculation.
Right. But I think you're right. I mean, I think that's exactly what's going to happen, is that somebody cancels that FastPass Plus, it's going to release back to the pool. And a big part of this whole next-gen project, I mean, the side of this that the guests are seeing is My Magic Plus, and it's, you know, important in what we're interested in. On the back side of this is, you know, the whole back end that manages all of it. And that's what Disney's really interested in, right? You know, their infrastructure is where most of this cost went. And so this whole system really relies on their ability to better manage and reassign FastPass Plus to help manage park capacity. You know, they want ultimately to be able to relieve the periodic congestion and things that comes up in various parks by being able to, you know, make more FastPass Plus available, for example, in another part of the park. You know, if they see Hollywood Studios is bogging down on Sunset Boulevard, then, you know, maybe they release a few more FastPass Plus over at Star Tours and at Toy Story Midway Mania and tighten up the availability of FastPass Plus at Tower of Terror and Rock and Roller Coaster. And that gives them a much more powerful tool to manage crowd flow than they've got currently.
I think that also raises a question about what happens when a ride goes down at some point. You know, I've seen Big Thunder Mountain go down, you know, for, you know, some safety concern or whatever during the course of the day. What's going to happen to all those people? I think the fact that Disney has, you know, guest information, you know, cell phone numbers, everything, if they can send out texts and say, look, you're FastPass Plus is up in 15 minutes, but Big Thunder Mountain is closed for some safety concern. What are they going to do with those people? They're going to give them an option to do it later. You know, what's going to happen? So it's a massive scheduling headache on for Disney, and they've got the computer horsepower behind it to get things sorted out at the front end. It's just when things are going wrong, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Sure. I mean, it's not, look, let's not pretend that doesn't happen now. I mean, they deal with it as it is. You know, I mentioned in my trip report when we were walking up to Big Thunder Mountain and the ride was down because something wasn't working right, whatever. And, you know, the Brazilian tour guide in front of us holding the 2-inch thick stack of fast passes, you know, scolding the CM and waving the fast passes in his face. Like that was suddenly going to make the ride safe and ready to open. You know, those people are going to come back, most likely. My experience is that normally being an individual in that situation, they've said, the ride's down. If the ride's down for more, I think that they said if we're down for more than 20 minutes or so, you know, come back and we'll honor your fast pass out of time. My guess is that that's what they would do with FastPass Pluses too, and it'll throw, you know, strange glitches into their system, and they'll, you know, the system will absorb them like it does now. The line will probably be slow that day.
Yeah, it's an easy low-tech solution for a lot of high-tech stuff going on in the background, which I think they do pretty well.
Sure. But you're right, it does give them an alternative too, in that if they see that that happens, you know, maybe they've got some extra FastPass Plus that they can make available at Jungle Cruise, or extra FastPass Plus they can make available for you know, something on the other side of the park, pull some people out of Frontierland and, you know, get some of the standby folks out of the line so that they can process the extra late FastPass Pluses. It's a tool that they didn't have before that they will have now. Okay, so we talked about FastPass Plus. One of the things that I want to emphasize here, first of all, we now know, we've seen it confirmed now, that it's not going to be limited to only resort guests. That's the way it's happening. It's the way it's rolling out. It's rolling out to resort guests first, but that's just a logistical issue for now. The terms and conditions are clear that off-property guests will end up ultimately with access to My Magic Plus and FastPass Plus as well. So that, I think, should allay a lot of fears that people had. Another thing that we know now that should help ease some of the concerns about FastPass Plus is that we know, as we said, that there will be some, at least, FastPass Plus available on day of. So if you're not somebody who's planning 60 days out, you know, there's going to be some availability for you. They're not going to lock you out of the park. Remember that the only reason this exists is because Disney wants to make it easier for guests and have them spend less time in line. So it's not in Disney's interest to create a system that forces people to stay in line a lot longer just because they happen to show up without having made advanced reservation. And I think those are good things. Does anybody want to address this issue of RFID and privacy? I know that a lot of people have probably, you know, read the exchange of letters that went back and forth between, I believe it was Congressman Markey and Bob Iger on this subject. But I don't know, somebody want to talk a little bit about the RFID security issue?
Yeah, to my knowledge, the only thing on the RFID band or even in the Key to the World card with RFID chips in them is a code. And the only way it is linked to you would be with the little finger thing as you go in through the gate. And outside of that, there's no personal information on that chip.
Yeah, I mean, the genius of this system is that all that RFID is a key that unlocks information that's held in Disney's database. I know that I've heard speculation from people, you know, they don't like the idea that, you know, Disney will know where they are in the park based on the scanning of their RFID bracelet, you know, when they use their FastPass Plus. Maybe I'm Pollyannish about this a little bit, but I don't think Disney cares where you personally are in the park. What they care about is the aggregate information that's generated by scanning those bands. Is that making sense?
Yes. Also, I don't know if this is, you know, speculation again, but wouldn't it be awesome if your kid went in there and Mickey Mouse, if it's the talking Mickey Mouse, addressed them by name, because you'd scan your band right before you went in?
Well, we know that that kind of thing is coming, and that's exactly what I was getting to, is that's the trade-off, right? I mean, look, we're not giving – when you use My Magic Plus, you're not really giving Disney any more information than you already give them, right? They already know, because when you book, you give them your name – you give them, depending on what other things you do, you give them the ages of your kids, you give them your credit card number, you give them your home address, you give them your phone number, you give them their cell number when you make dining reservations and give them a number you can be reached in the park. You've already given them all this information. It's not that there's nothing new there. What My Magic Plus does is make it so that that information you've already given them can actually have, you know, be used in a positive way to enhance your guest experience. And Nate, you were just talking about a good example of that.
Right. It finally makes it useful for you. You know, all this information is useful to Disney in a lot of ways, but you're giving them all this information will finally be useful for you because you've got this, you know, RFID tag associated with you in the parks.
Right, right. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I think this is going to be glitch-free. There are going to be some embarrassing moments. There's going to be, you know, mistakes where Cinderella walks up to, you know, little Susie and calls her Sally, because, you know, the wires get crossed about, you know, who's who. But the potential there is, I think, so tremendous. You know, you have a kid whose birthday is being celebrated at Character Meal, and their favorite face character comes over and doesn't just say, "Happy birthday, princess," but says, "Happy birthday, Michaela. Did you get to ride, you know, the system knows that her favorite ride," because you can choose to give them more information. So part of the more information you can choose to give them is your favorite ride. All right. So she tells them her favorite ride is Tower of Terror, and her character can say, "Happy birthday, Michaela. Hope you're having a wonderful trip. Did you get to ride Tower of Terror today?" You know, all of a sudden, that becomes a real encounter with the character and not just...
It's not generic, right?
Yeah, so, generic. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah. I mean, I remember our first trip, and this was an after-the-fact thing, but we were leaving our, you know, Cinderella's Royal Table meal, where, you know, the kids get to go and talk to Cinderella beforehand. As we were leaving, you know, my older daughter was waving to Cinderella, and Cinderella waves over to her and says, you know, "Hi," and then said my daughter's name. And that was just amazing that, number one, she'd remembered, and number two, that she had been able to, you know, associate the name with the face again. After that much time and after seeing that many kids, but that was really amazing.
Sure.
From my perspective, my daughter just thought, "Oh yeah, well, I'm the only kid in the world, so that's fine." But you know, it really struck me how meaningful that was to have that, you know, sort of individualized experience. And I give a lot of credit to that Cinderella for remembering her. But if, you know, we can give that to everybody, every, you know, face character, even if they don't have that kind of memory, and be able to do it at the start of the interaction, I think that really does make it so much more of a personalized experience.
Right, and we're going to see this experience, these personal experiences, in more places. It's not just going to be character meet and greets. You know, the one that has gotten the most press that I think that we can now say is happening because people have seen the installation already is that, you know, the closing scene of Small World is going to have an element that is connected to these RFID bracelets where you can design your own Small World type doll on a computer or on an app. You do it in advance, and then when you go through the ride, when your kid goes through the ride, at the closing scene, sort of after you've passed all the dolls and it's got all the farewell messages, there's now an LCD screen that's set up, and those individual dolls will show up on that screen.
Oh, great. Now I have to ride it.
But, you know, it is, to me, what's so amazing about that element of it is that that, to me, feels like an extension of Walt's vision. You know, I mean, Walt's vision for the theme parks was to take entertainment from two dimensions of somebody watching a screen to three dimensions. And that's why we get audio animatronics. That's why we get these great storytelling dark rides. This takes it, again, to the next level, because now it's not just observing in three dimensions, but it's actual interaction with the attractions. All right, so a few things that I just want to kind of touch base on real quickly so we don't forget to talk about them. As we've mentioned, on-site and off-site guests will be able to use the systems. There's not going to be any extra cost just to use the system. But let's talk for a minute about the My Magic Plus bracelets that are going to sort of be the new carriers of this information. You know, Eric's right in terms of the RFID tag. It's not any different than the tag that's already embedded in the new plastic room keys. But we've seen some pictures of the magic bands, and Nathan was doing a little scouting work for us and looking at the FCC report on the bands. And why don't you talk a little bit about what you noticed?
I just noticed a picture in the SEC report of the backside of the band, and it appears that it has someone's name at the very top of it, Michael, which I thought was very interesting, that the bands will be individualized to the person, which leads me to believe that that's your band. You know, you can use that from now and evermore.
Right, and I think that one of those elements, I mean, look, this is Disney, right? If there's a way to make some extra money off of it, they're going to find
it. They're going to sell them.
And we already know, you know, some of that information, some of those pictures leaked out. There's going to be the ability to purchase specially designed, specially themed magic bands. You know, if you don't think your kid is going to wear the default green band, fine. Stop in at the Emporium and pick them up a, you know, pirate themed magic band, and they'll wear the pirate theme band.
I'm buying a Mater one if there's one available.
Oh, come on, it's Cars. You know there will be.
Gotta have Mater.
You know, my guess is that you know, magic bands are going to become the next big collectible.
Oh, yeah.
And this, again, is the beauty of RFID as opposed to the magnetic strip, which had a lot more detailed information encoded on it. Since RFID is just a key to data that's already in their database, any magic band that you can bring to the, you know, a CM with access to the terminal and appropriate identification for yourself, that magic band can become tied to your account. So it works both ways. You could have a different magic band to go with each outfit and just have a CM change your, you know, which one is connected to you each day. Or you could use the same magic band for the next six trips. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just reading some information on the blog earlier today, and it said, you know, referring to if you lost said band,
right,
that, you know, you can either report it, or you would have the ability in the My Disney Experience app to cancel that band.
Oh, so that's even better than what I was saying. You don't even need to find, yep, a CM. You just log into My Disney Experience and say cancel that band. That's easier than a lost key to the world card. So. What was that?
I said that's the way it read in the blog, and that was one of the responses to someone's question about losing the band.
Right.
And it did give them the option to kill that band in the My Disney Experience app.
Oh, that's fabulous. I mean, it makes a lot of sense, and it means that a lot of these fears about, you know, a lost band potentially exposing your information to an identity thief is really unnecessary. I mean, you know, as we said, there's no information on the band itself anyway, and if you can revoke the key instantly, and all you got to do is walk in and, you know, spend a few dollars on a replacement magic band, or simply say, you know, can you run me an RFID card? there's no problem.
Plus, having the thing strapped to your wrist rather than in your pocket, well, where you know you're going in and out with it 1,000 times a day for various things, seems like it'd be a lot harder to lose it having it strapped to your wrist. Then I know I've got, I don't carry a wallet in the park. Just stick a key to the world car, driver's license, maybe another credit card in my pocket, and like I said, I'm in and out of there 100 times a day, usually buying stuff. And I know I've had times when I've had a card fall on the floor, and luckily I've noticed it and picked it up. But having it strapped to my wrist instead makes losing it a lot less likely, I think.
Well, sure, because if you lose it, you're going to notice. And let's be clear. You know, some people have said they don't want to. They don't like things around the wrist. Their kid don't like things around the wrist. Okay, people, think for a minute. It's not like it stops working if it's removed from your wrist. If you can't wear things around your wrist, don't. Connect it to your lanyard. You know? Put it in your pocket. It still works. That complaint just kind of blew me away. I wonder sometimes if people are thinking these things through.
I mean, you could put it through your belt loop on your shorts.
Sure.
You didn't want to wear it on your wrist.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all of these things. It seems to me that people have been looking for excuses to not be happy about this.
Yeah.
From my perspective, there's so much win here. There are so many ways that this is going to make the guest experience better, easier, more flexible, and not what I hear from a lot of people, which is, I don't want to make reservations so far in advance. How do I know when I want to ride on that ride? All these things about security of their information that they're worried about. You know, when you look at the details of this system, I see this as benefit after benefit for guests.
And another benefit, just having dealt with the RFID entryways into the parks, I think that probably you would agree that those are better than the slide the card through the slot entry gates for the parks. Is that true?
I would agree with one caveat, and I think Nate had similar issues that I had, and that is that they have got to do a better job of training staff on how to handle assigning tickets to accounts, because we had problems when we checked in, because when we were at for the Diz Dad's convention, we had a split stay. We came up early, stayed at Pop Century for a couple of days, and then when the convention started, we moved over to Port Orleans. And when we moved over to Port Orleans, I had them take the rest of our ticket and put it on our room keys, because we had the RFID room keys. I figured that would make everything easier. Well, we had a problem every single time we entered a park the rest of the trip. Readers would not correctly identify the tickets, and we had to stop and talk to a CM every time. Nate, I seem to remember you had similar issues.
Our RFID tickets never worked, and they kept mentioning the same code over and over. And I finally asked them what that meant, and they said that the tickets were not actually put on the RFID. They were on my magnetic strip only. So
yeah, so that there were problems with getting the tickets properly assigned to the RFID card. Now, I think it's going to get better once they stop issuing magnetic strip cards. Because, eventually, as this changeover happens, they're going to be looking to replace as many of the admission turnstiles as possible with the RFID media readers instead of the magnetic strip readers. They're going to have to keep the magnetic strip readers for at least a year or so, because they've still got right now season pass holders who have to use magnetic strip readers to enter the park. But even annual pass holders, it looks like, will be switching over to an RFID system in the next year. But yeah, I mean, entry to the park should be much more efficient once they get the, sort of nuts and bolts part of properly assigning the tickets to the card worked out.
Yeah, right now as it is, the magnetic strip entrances, though, are really a nightmare, because there's half the capacity now because they're using the RFID entrance over here, and only a limited number of people are using that. Everybody else is funneling into that magnetic strip entry.
Yeah.
It's quite a log jam.
That's true. That's true. You know, these are growing pains, and you're right. I think we're just going to have to deal with them for the next, you know, probably 12 to 18 months until it all shakes out. Once they can get everybody switched over to RFID, though, entering the parks should become a much, much smoother, easier process.
And additionally, from the sort of the pains that I had getting our ticket sorted out when I was at the convention, it seems that while we're seeing a big change to the Disney website on our end, the cast members also have a change to their systems as a result of all these sort of next-gen upgrades.
That's true.
So putting things on a Key to the World card, whether RFID or not, has changed. So there are things that they have to do now that they didn't have to do before to get tickets on and put them on the RFID section. And it may just be a matter of training to get everybody up to the same level, because you know, once it gets sorted out, it seemed to work fine for us. But they definitely have a learning curve that they need to climb on their end in order to deal with their end of the next gen stuff.
Right. Right. And everybody can take some time getting used to it. I mean, the ability to use your Magic Band to, you know, pay for purchases. It looks like purchases less than $50, you won't even have to sign for.
It's actually all purchases. We did a lot of purchases under $50, and they're still asking for a PIN code.
Interesting.
Under $50. So we did have some experience with that.
I still think, from what I've been reading, that once the changeover is complete, the PIN should only need to be used for over $50. But either way, frankly, it's still better than, you know, paper receipts and fumbling with a pen and, you know, all of that. It just, I think, is going to be much, much, again, streamlined, simpler, and frankly, there's some environmental impact stuff here, too. I mean, once you stop printing all of those cardboard or, you know, coated paper FastPass tickets, and you stop having to run all of those, you know, Tyvek paper ticket media, and you stop having to run, you know, a lot of long paper receipts, that stuff adds up. If nothing else, it makes for less trash around the parks.
I know the Keys to the World card only used like your Visa card, but I wonder if there's potential to add like a Disney gift card to your Magic Band.
It's an interesting question, and I don't know that we have the answer to that yet, but yeah. It would seem to me to make perfect sense.
Because this trip I went on Mater card, and and that worked pretty good, but that would be neat to have it on the band as well.
Right. Well, and you can sort of do that in a roundabout way, because if your Magic Band does room, you know, if you set up your Magic Band to charge to your room, and you can give the front desk a gift card and have them go ahead and basically go ahead and charge it. And when they do that, it just takes whatever's on that gift card and puts it as a credit on your room balance. And so you could then Magic Band against that balance.
That's a good way to do it. Hadn't thought of that.
All right. So a few more things about My Magic Plus and FastPass Plus and all of this system. I think we've talked about a lot of the important stuff. So let's maybe kind of look ahead at some things that we hope or that we think might, you know, come into play with My Magic Plus. I don't know. Nate, why don't you share with us your favorite speculation about My Magic Plus?
I guess my favorite speculation would fall back to the FastPass system. I think it would be ideal if they would have more central locations for FastPasses in general, so you don't have to run all the way across the park to, you know, get a thing. Maybe even do it on your phone. See what's available.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that we actually have a good indication that, the ability to use your phone to manage FastPass Plus is going to be there. And if you've got an available FastPass Plus slot, you should be able to use your phone even day of to make a reservation. Because one of the comments that, Tom Staggs made right off the bat was, you know, the one of the things that they had discovered about paper FastPasses is that they create gridlock. Because people rush to the FastPass machines, you know, first thing when the park opens, they grab their FastPasses and then turn around and leave, and you've got the next wave of people coming right towards them.
Yeah, I guess my idea was more toward the regular FastPass instead of a FastPass Plus, having a more central location. You know, have like a touchscreen kiosk where you can, you know, scan your band or your card, see what's available, and pick, you know, the card.
Right.
Might be smart enough to know how many people was in your party.
Well, it should.
Sit there and go boom, boom, boom. You know, I need 4 fast passes for this. And say you got party of 6 and 2 of them didn't want a fast pass for that. You can get them fast passes for something else.
Right. And the system should know that because remember that in My Disney Experience, you know, your whole reservation is attached. And one of the first things that My Disney Experience asks you to do when you link a resort reservation, for example, into the system is it asks you to identify all the people who are part of your party.
So, yeah, my ideal system would be I'm in Frontierland and I want to get a fast pass for Space Mountain. I walk up to the central location in Frontierland and I can get me a fast pass for Space Mountain without having to run across the park to get it.
Sure.
This is day of fast passes.
Right. It will be interesting to see. Frankly, everything having to do with day of fast passes will be interesting to see, you know, how that gets handled, how they get distributed. Because I think that there's still going to be an effort to distribute them electronically. I think that the whole goal here is to get rid of paper.
Yeah.
All right. So, Eric, how about you? What's your favorite My Magic Plus, Fast Pass Plus, next gen, you know, speculation?
My sort of dream with this is a sort of seamless experience across all of Disney's vast holdings. This year, for instance, we're going to be doing at least one race at Disney. So we'll be down in Walt Disney World. We're going to go. My wife and I are doing a cruise for a few days, and we're also going out to Disneyland. So. Let's say I go in March and I get a premium annual pass and I've got this, you know, somehow linked to my account. So this is as My Magic Plus extends out all the way to people who have annual passes too. So I do a premier annual pass there. I maybe stay a night at Walt Disney World, get my entry into the park. That's fine. Go out to the cruise ship. I walk through the terminal there. And I go by one of these RFID things and just kind of wave there. And that checks me in for the cruise because it's already linked to my account in Disney's databases. You know, get off the cruise. I've got to present some other documentation somewhere, but, you know, just having that, you know, sort of ease of entry that first, just to get checked in.
Sure.
Would be so nice. And then I go out to Disneyland and, you know, I've got a reservation linked to my account. I can, you know, walk by a kiosk in the lobby and that checks me in and it'll let me know when my room is ready. And then when I get out to my room, I've got my magic band from, you know, months and months ago, maybe. And I can use that on the door immediately. So, you know, is that sort of, seamless integration of everything all tied back to that one database record.
Right.
That seems like it would be a great way to leverage guest experience across all those different places and at least the things that Disney controls. I mean, things like Adventures by Disney, it might be a little bit tougher to manage, but at least in the Disney parks, Disney cruise ship, being able to tie all those together with that one database record seems like it would be a big win for the guest, potentially.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think that for me, the couple of things that I'm sort of most interested in that we don't really have all the information that I would like to have about in terms of this whole system is that, first of all, I think that we have a good indication that there's likely to be some sort of special bonus surprise fast passes that may just show up in people's account. There's some evidence that it's already kind of built into the system to happen. And it just got me thinking, in your situation, for example, if it would be really cool if the system learned and knew that, for example, when you were at Disney World in March, you had gotten a FastPass Plus for Tower of Terror. And then in July, you were in Disneyland and you just found added to your account a Tower of Terror FastPass as a special surprise for a guest because they knew you liked the attraction. That would be, to me, a really great example of using the system to enhance the guest experience and at least create the impression, I try to remain, to maintain my professional distance from Disney, but, to create the impression that Disney cares about its guests, right? That they're paying attention to your individualized preferences.
And it's easy to do.
Exactly. It's very easy to do. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing how those kind of extra little surprises get blended into the system, because, as part of that whole enhanced interactive experience, some of this is going to have to do with character interaction. Some of this is going to have to do with special things that are being built into rides, like the thing at Small World. But I would like to see it also, coming from, a quick serve restaurant, knowing that your favorite dessert is a brownie. And so, an extra brownie just showing up on your tray. Because they know from your My Magic Plus, when you pay, that, that's a special thing. It costs them pennies, and it makes for, a moment.
A moment in a quick service restaurant, which is harder to come by than...
Right, exactly. Exactly. All right.
My bell whip.
There you go. See, Nate, they ought to be able to know when you go to pay that you want not just a regular Dole Whip float, you want a Nate. And My Magic Plus, by God, should be able to tell them how to do it.
Cast members will be delivering Dole Whips to Nate every 5 minutes during the course of his vacation.
Okay, well, that's more than speculation. I think we've just found ourselves stumbling into Nate's own PhilharMagic dream. But anyway, you've now heard Nate and Eric and I ramble a little bit about what we think is coming down the road here and hopefully a little bit of what we know is coming with My Magic Plus. We'd love to hear from you, and I think this is a topic that bears some further discussion. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com, visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. Until next time, it's been Aaron Ripmaster with Eric Anderson.
See ya.
And Nathan Trent.
Goodbye, humans. We filled up the canister. Yay.
You can all go home now.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.